to get through. And as I was building our YouTube channel, I stumbled on a lot of gems that I had in my private archives and hard drives, and so I thought it was important to get some of this stuff out. Just to, it's good footage for people to play people if people are not listening to them when they're questioning and when they defend the official story so much, to just show to just show people the absurdity of what we're being shown and is being depicted as real footage and audio from that day. But before the break, we heard an interesting clip about a fellow who was actually broadcast live on television who said to the TV news crew that he was trapped on floor 86 of the North Tower, which is seven stories below where the alleged plane went in. And he said that he was trapped by collapsing floors and debris. I mean, it's the seven floors floors below where the plane went in. And that there was no way out, basically, and the staircases were all blocked. Well, he actually said earlier on in the documentary in a different phone call that the staircases were blocked. It's what he told his family members. Now, it's an interesting piece of testimony because the plane went in allegedly at floor 93. But another piece of testimony we have from the ultra-unreliable Mr. George Slay, who said he escaped from the 91st floor, which was five stories higher than this particular actor. And I'm going to play this piece of audio right now because this severely contradicts the account that we just heard. And this is from a late 2001 documentary, another British production. I don't know why the Brits seem to make more documentaries about 9/11 than the Americans do, but this was called Why the World Trade Center Collapsed. This documentary is before any official reports came out, of the major ones, the FEMA or the NIST, but anyway, we'll play this piece of audio and we'll come back and talk about it.
It's fell. British-born naval architect George Slay was on the 91st floor of the North Tower at 8:46 a.m.
I was on the phone, I heard a roar, looked out the window and saw this passenger jet coming towards the building. It was only about two or three plane lengths away from me at that point, and I didn't really have time to react. It was just, I saw it and then it was into the building.
George's office was just below the point at which nearly 200 tons of Boeing 767 had struck the tower.
Our offices are between the two arrowheads, and my office was particularly to the first three windows to the right of this arrowhead, in this area here. It doesn't get much closer than that. My office kind of collapsed around me. One of my colleagues came rushing along to see if I was okay and offered to drag me out. I politely refused. I said I was okay and crawled out myself.
Very interesting testimony, to say the least, because we have someone who supposedly escaped from five floors above him, and with the whole, all his colleagues and all the staff from the floors below that managed to get out. And I'm sure we've heard numerous stories about, well, I know we have other stories. I mean, I don't have time to go and get those clips now, but of people that escaped from higher higher than those particular floors. And you have to wonder, you really have to wonder. I mean, if his story is supposedly true, then why is he needing to call for help? I mean, there were people, must have been hundreds of people escaping from those five floors above him. You know, how come he didn't call out to some of those people to help him? And why is that not part of his story? I mean, it's not like he was the last floor before the plane allegedly went in. Just complete, utter, unadulterated rubbish, basically. And I just can't see how people don't see through it. It's some of the worst acting that I've ever seen, either B or C.
Out to their family.
You know, just completely, totally and utterly just, and just terrible acting, basically. And you know, I'm sure there's lots of other clips that basically totally contradict his account. But George Slay, I mean, of course, he's given lots of different accounts, including to a magazine a few years ago, where he said that he looked out the window and he managed to see into the cockpit of the plane and he saw hijackers in the cockpit. I mean, he actually said this. Just absolutely, for an older guy, like the guy I see in the video is like 60 or older, like, you know, 20/20 eyesight, a plane going 500 miles an hour, two or three plane lengths away, and you manage to see all that. So just complete utter fucking bullshit. There's no other word for it. We got another phone call here, but very brief, and this one's probably the most absurd of the lot that we've heard so far.
Yeah, it's Brian. A plane crashed into the Trade Center. Hostage on fire, and I'm in it. And I can't breathe. Tell everyone I love them. I don't get an idea.
End of message.
Brian.
I mean, we heard about half of that call at the opening of the show from the 2002 documentary America Remembers, but. Well, I think it might have been a memoriam, actually. There were a few documentaries that came out that year. It was the one that had all of Giuliani's acting in it. I covered a lot of that off in a show I did earlier this year, which you can find in the archives if you haven't already listened to a similar sort of show to this one, going through all the early documentaries and getting all the acting gems. But, I mean, what he says he can't breathe and... And you know, and yet he's not coughing or anything. I mean, just, I mean, come on, what can you say? You know, I'm in the building and I can't breathe. Oh, but I'm not coughing or I'm not in any distress. I mean, you show anybody this footage and they seriously deny what they're seeing. I mean, you know, just forget about it, you know, you're an idiot. If you can't see through this, I don't know what to say. You know, you don't have tremendously much discernment. You're not too bright. I don't know, but if you can't see this as acting, I mean, and you know, it's but over a million people have watched this documentary and not one person has alluded to anything I've mentioned in the comments so far that I could see. So there's a lot of blind sheep out there that just believe whatever they see, believe whatever they're told, believe whatever they hear. It's a crying shame because they tell us that we're straw men and we don't have any proof. And that we wear tinfoil hats. Well, you know, this is pretty cold hard proof where I come from, but you know, I suppose different people have different standards of proof. An interesting side element to all of this is that in the early days of the official story, we heard a lot about how the plane impacts knocked out TV and radio and cell phone antennas on the roof, which, you know, the top of the North Tower was a hub of satellites and dishes and communications, and even the phone lines in the building. Many people couldn't call out. I mean, that was the official story. People around Manhattan, in particular, I spoke to Justin about this the other day. He recalls even as far as Connecticut, 2 hours away, the phone lines, the cell phones were not working for a long period of hours during and after the attacks. And that's what all we were told in all of the in all of the early television news footage was that, you know, that their antennas were knocked out and they're having to use alternates or use each other's networks or whatever, and they couldn't broadcast because a plane crash had knocked out all that stuff. Yet now the story has changed to, oh, there were 10,000 calls in the first 3 minutes. Or however many, 3,000 calls in the first 10 minutes, whatever it was, in that clip. I mean, which is it? The story about these phone calls has changed so many times over the years. You know, and even Scott Fraud said on the Fetzer show, we talked about in great detail in past shows, that, yeah, he said he called someone from his apartment that was in the building. you know, so we got people calling both from the outside in and from the inside out. Yet we were told early on that all the phone lines were damaged and you couldn't get a call out. So, I mean, which is it? You know, the story about the communications has changed so many times over the years that, you know, just funny how people forget all that stuff. But this documentary in particular was quite... It took my interest in a way because, you know, the home... There were probably between 8 and 12 really good home videos in this documentary. You're relatively brief, but, you know, short home videos of the alleged victims in the form of weddings, birthdays, you know, as children, etc. Still no videos, of course, of people at work in the towers. That footage eludes us, of course. But I've always criticized, and Brian too, that every year you don't see these pictures and videos on your news feeds on Facebook. At least 3,000 people that died. And prior to this documentary, there's probably less than 5 home videos that we'd seen of anybody. I think there was an Oganowski wedding video, and there might have been a couple of others. One video of people working at the trade center, and another like fire safety video or whatever, but yeah, those could have been filmed anywhere. It's a pretty generic set. And as long as there were a few floors at the actual building itself, they could have been filmed there also. Now, granted, I mean, maybe it isn't the same person in the home videos. Maybe some close analysis of the pictures compared to the clips may reveal that. But I'm beginning to suspect that the number of people... And Brian's always said that there were obviously people that were real people that were paid money to disappear to create a backstory, you know, like Oganowski, for example. A lot of research that he was a real person, and that certainly his family must be in on the deception. Originally, I mean, Brian estimated maybe 50. I was more inclined to think maybe more closer to 20 people, maybe a couple of the pilots and a few of the victims, but I'm starting to think that the number really may be closer to between 40 and 70 maybe than just 20 or so. Most of the people that you see on YouTube and whatever and even come in our Facebook groups and on Let's Roll forums a little bit as well, people saying that they know someone who died on 9/11, how dare we say all this stuff. They know someone that died in the building, blah, blah, blah. But vast majority of those people, like the people that say they saw plane crashes and whatever, are definitely liars, are just putting themselves in the spotlight. You know, you ask them for a name. Oh, well, it was my friend's cousin's friend's sister's brother's child, you know, and it goes on and on. But, you know, a few of those people, I really think they're telling the truth. You know, it's not so much them directly, but maybe someone that they know, or they know someone who knows someone. And the story's gone down the grapevine somehow, but I definitely think that some of these people are sincere, and I can't call all of them liars. I don't think for a second that all of the family members are in on it. I mean, obviously the Oganowski family was, and certainly, but maybe there are some families who genuinely think that they lost somebody on 9/11. I mean, probably not anyone from this particular documentary, although they interviewed the family members with the home video, so maybe a few, because some of them showed a little bit closer to real emotion than others. But maybe there are some people that legitimately think that their kid died, and obviously I don't think for a second that they did die, but you know, maybe they created a backstory, and maybe they took a facelift and a one-way ticket to, I don't know, Costa Rica or somewhere like that. I mean, yeah, maybe the family genuinely thinks they died that day, you know. It would make sense, you know, maybe just one person from every second state or whatever, just to create a backstory. Or maybe they were individual people that wanted to fake their deaths for one reason or another, legal, financial problems. Maybe they were given an ultimatum that their problem would go away, or they might spend the next 20 years in jail. And the rest of people, obviously like Oganowski, like key people, maybe 10 to 20 key really famous people, but maybe a lot of them were just low profile victims, you know, just to create a... Because Brian always comes up against opposition when he talks about this stuff in his hometown of Lowell, because, you know, right next to it is Draker, which is where Oganowski hailed from, not allegedly, he did. And people always say to him when he says nobody died, well, they say, oh, what about Oganowski? You know, and then I'm sure that, you know, some of these people that we've talked about today, like, you know, your Kevin Costgroves, I mean, they're complete frauds, there's no doubt about it. But, yeah, maybe in regards to some other people, just in every second state, or maybe one or two people, just maybe so that everyone, nobody supposedly died from New Zealand in the trades, you know. There's allegedly one Kiwi that was killed, supposedly on Flight 93, but we know that flight didn't exist for sure. So that's a load of crap, but I mean, I don't get the what about Oganowski thing around here, but maybe every second state there's a person that did relocate, take some money, you know, who knows what the true number is, I don't think we'll ever know that, but maybe that's what it is, and then so that every time one of us activists comes around, there's somebody in every state to say, oh, well, okay, maybe people didn't die in planes, and the death toll's a lot lower than what we think, because there isn't even no official death toll. It's like six different death tolls. And the records for the death rates in New York that day were no higher than they normally were. Should have been a spike of just about 3,000. But, well, okay, well, what about, you know, what about Oganowski? What about whoever? Every second town, there's like another Oganowski. So people say, oh, what about him? What about her? And it's like a big stone wall, and then you say no one died, and then it turns out you can prove that a few of these people did exist, and they did disappear, and you sort of lose your credibility. In reality, it's just because they existed doesn't mean that they died. But you sort of lose interest from them. It would make sense. And if you think about it too, one of the most absurd things about the official story, and we've talked about it many times on this network, and then obviously a little on the Last American Network, and we used to do shows over there for Let's Roll and Phil, we talk a lot about one of the most absurd things we've ever been told is the official story that over half of the victims from the World Trade Center were never identified, you know, over 1,400 people, despite advanced DNA testing for 5 years. And many of these people in this documentary I just played fell into that category of people who had never been identified. And what's interesting about that is that, not only did the destruction of this building, if it were fully occupied, destroy all non-metallic objects, the concrete, the furniture, whatever, if you believe it was a fully occupied building, also managed to cremate 1,400 people beyond all DNA recognition. Of course, you don't even need a body to get DNA. You can get DNA from a blood stain or a hair fiber. So to have over 1,400 people to this day never been identified. And first of all, it's absurd to think they'd go on and build a new building, you know, and when all those cops and firemen died in there. Like, come on, I mean, you know, until every last person was identified, they wouldn't... Family members would be protesting every year. They would form a human chain. They wouldn't let them go in and break ground for a new building when there's a high probability that there's more body parts to be found. I mean, the fact that they're not doing that is a huge indicator that, yeah, this whole story is complete bunk and that nobody did die. But I've always thought to myself, why on earth would they say that 1,400 people were never identified? I mean, it's like so absurd. You know, why wouldn't they just say that they were? You know, why would you have something that stands out and just is so bloody wrong and can be demonstrably proven that a natural collapse couldn't do that? And then I got to thinking, well, maybe it's the perfect excuse for them, for maybe 20, 30 family members that genuinely think they did lose a loved one that day. And it's always generic, oh, he was in New York, he was round about the World Trade, and he was just going to work for a day, and then he was coming home. You know, maybe that's what that excuse is there for, that they can say to those family members, look, because say their son or daughter took some money, took a one-way ticket to some foreign country, and has disappeared, basically faked their own death. Maybe all those families don't have a single body part or a DNA or no death certificate has been released. So they really didn't die. So it's really clean. They're sort of missing, presumed dead. But, you know, maybe they genuinely think that they lost their loved one, but he or she faked their death or whatever. I mean, it's a distinct possibility, and it would explain Yeah, I mean, of course, those home videos could be fake and they could all be acting, and that's still a high possibility, but we have always maintained from the moment that we discovered the Oganowski fraud, you know, we've always maintained strongly that there were at least several people who, at least one, if not several people, who have, you know, taken money and disappeared. And some of their families are in on it, but I don't think most of them would be. There's no need to. It just creates more problems. So I think one thing this documentary has raised is a distinct possibility that that may be what has occurred, and it would explain a lot of this stuff. And I think they are stepping up their game, and there probably will be more documentaries with home videos. And they've seen no home videos pretty much at all. We've still got no airport security videos or anything, and there's no proof of any planes, so I mean, we're never going to see that. But we hadn't seen home videos, and then there's this documentary that's got, you know, 8 to 12 of them, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's the good ones too, you know, like, and some more pictures that just don't look Photoshop. I mean, obviously, they probably are, unless they are real people that fake their death, but they're doing a much better job on it now, and we're not going to see in the future too many more, you know, laughing Robbie Parkers or people like that, you know, from Sandy Hook, obviously. You know, it's going to be harder and harder to prove this. And Boston, particularly, was probably the new format for the new psychological opera. It's, you know, it's going to get a lot harder to prove these things. So we need to heavily archive what we do have from these old psyops and entertain new possibilities that they're going to be using more advanced forms of fakery and victims and relatives, and things are going to be harder to detect, and we need to be onto it and consider all those possibilities. But it's time for another break here, and when we come back, we'll get into some more of this stuff, and then maybe play a few more clips before we end the show tonight. So you've got James Sloan with you, and don't go anywhere, because we'll be right back. Welcome back to Dose of Reality Radio. I'm your host, James Sloan. We've got a nice double header of rock songs there. I know Brian typically plays rap songs on this network. Yeah, and the odd classic rock song too. It's all good stuff, but my personal taste has always been more geared towards classic rock and pop. And I know Brian doesn't mind, obviously, because I'm sure our listeners have a diverse range of musical tastes. So, when I grew up too, when I was about 8 or 9, that was when Eminem was peaking, and that was certainly magnificent stuff too. I sort of just missed out on the golden age of the mid-90s with Tupac and the rest of them. I was alive, but I was too young to appreciate it, and don't imagine my parents would have been too happy me listening to that sort of music. Mind you, they said rock music back in the day would corrupt people too, but the symbolism is blatant through all music. It's there in the classic rock too, just as in Jay-Z stuff, and you only gotta look at, like Pink Floyd's albums, the big triangle on the front, and then Supertramp's Breakfast in America album, of course, with the World Trade Center, and then even Led Zeppelin's music. The Satanism is blatant. Some of that backmasking stuff, as I've alluded to in the past, I think is rubbish and the power of suggestion, but some others, like Stairway to Heaven, for example, you can clearly hear satanic lyrics compare it to a deliberate. I might actually play that later in the next segment or something. Compare it to other known examples of backmasking, like Pink Floyd's Empty Spaces. It had a deliberately backmasked message played in it, played forwards in the song, and it's as clear as any other example. There's no way something like that happens by accident. So, like the Building 7 thing, it's as clean as other controlled demolitions, But, got another, a phone call here. This one, I'm going to play this and then an interview with the alleged recipient of this alleged phone call. And this is a recording of C.C. Lyles from Flight 93, alleged Flight 93. And this is what she had to say to her husband.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm on a plane that's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. I want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I don't know what to say. There's three guys. They've hijacked the plane. I'm trying to be calm. We're turned around. And I've heard that there's planes that's been thrown into the World Trade Center. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you. Goodbye.
This particular YouTube video that I'm playing this off, actually, I'm going to play the next segment of this. It apparently breaks down the call in more detail and suggests that there may be two voices or some sort of evidence of voice morphing. So, don't get me wrong, I don't think there were people that actually received phone calls. I think these are just actors, but maybe they used a variety of techniques in the recording of these calls, but we'll have a listen to a closer breakdown of this call.
End of message. Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm I'm on a plane that's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. I want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. Very much. Very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I don't know what to say. There's three guys. They've hijacked the plane. I'm trying to be... we're turned around, and I've heard that there's planes that have been thrown into the World Trade Center. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you. Goodbye. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you. Goodbye. I love you. Goodbye.
It was about like 9:30. I guess that's when the call started. Then I guess about, I didn't answer the phone until the last time she called, which was, I think it was like 9:51 or something to that. It was towards the, almost close to 10 o'clock by that time. And then that's when I get the phone call from her, and I actually had a chance to speak with her. And I'm waking up out of a sleep, and she just saying, babe, listen. And I'm like, I'm listening. And she said, my plane has been hijacked. And I said, stop playing, you know, because I'm just waking up. You thinking that it's, I've never played with you like that. She said, listen to me. And I heard the fear in her voice. I heard the fear. I heard the desperation in her voice to get out what she had to say. And she said, my plane has been hijacked. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, all I know is this, I love you. She said, I love you. Tell my boys I love them. I don't know if I'm going to see you guys again. And I'm like, at this point, my heart is like beating. I'm like, am I dreaming? Am I sleeping? You know, I didn't know whether I was still dreaming or what. I didn't know whether it was real or what. So, but I'm listening. So at that point, I stopped. I said, okay, well, let's pray. So we prayed. And then she told me that, she said, well, you know, we're getting ready to go to the cockpit. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what she's saying. I hear people in the background screaming, and I hear some bamming. And she said, okay, it's getting ready to happen. It's getting ready to happen. And then we got disconnected. And then that was the last time I spoke to her. Then once the phone got disconnected, then I sat up in the bed because I did all this laying down. I sat up in the bed like, it was like I just woke up. I'm like, was that a real call? So I looked at the caller ID and noticed that it was a call, and it was from her cell phone. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. How can she call me from on the plane from a cell phone? Because cell phones don't work on the plane. That's what I'm thinking.
And you're not alone in that thought either. This guy shows absolutely no emotion during this. It's a complete joke. It's a bad joke. Very, very, very terrible acting. Here is another alleged phone call from the towers on 9/11.
Message number 33 is the number one call. Receive operator 1886, console CP58, terminal 258. In reference to Sprint job 3081. The message was recorded from message 10022, channel 04. The message commences at $0800, 50 minutes and 30 seconds.
Police operator 1886, what is your emergency?
Yeah, hi. I'm on the 106th floor of the World Trade Center. We just had an explosion on the 105th floor.
The 106th floor?
Yes.
106, okay.
We have a conference up there that's about 100
people up here. What is your last name?
H-A-N-L-E-Y.
H-A-N?
We have smoke and it's pretty bad.
This is on the 106th floor, right?
Hello?
Okay, we have the job. Let me connect you with a file, okay?
Okay. Yes, it's fire. Smoke.
You have a...
We have...
Hold on, let me connect you with a fire, okay?
Here. We can't get down the stairs.
Hold on, let me connect you with fire. Come on now.
Distress. You sort of wonder why you would call 911 if you weren't in some distress, but it's the beauty of movies, they don't tend to make too much sense. But of course, definitely the one that always takes the cake everybody's about is, of course, the Mark Bingham phone call from Flight 93, the alleged phone call. And although we don't have audio of that call, we do have the absurd interview with his mother, the minute-long interview, which we're about to hear.
I got on the phone, Mark, and he said, "Hi, Mom, this is Mark Bingham." Give me his last name. And he said, "I want to let you know that I love you. And I'm flying, I think he said, I'm in the air, I'm calling you on the air phone of the airplane."
In his seat.
I presume so. He said, I want you to know I love you very much, and I'm calling you from the plane. We've been taken over. There are three men that say they have a bomb." And I said, "Well, who are they, Mark?" And he repeated that he loved me, and he said, I don't know who they are. He became distracted there as if someone was speaking to him. And he said, "It's something to the effect of, it's true." And then the phone went dead.
Three hijackers instead of the usual four, so another contradiction. Well, five on the three other planes and then four on this one, but now it's changed to three. I guess, again, movies don't tend to make too much sense, so... You know, I guess that's that. While we're here, we might as well actually listen to something that's not often played, that was played in the first couple of days. Muhammad Atta's alleged message from the cockpit, which is quite interesting.
"Is it America 11 trying to call? Buddy, we have some planes. Stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're heading to the airport.
And who's trying to call me here?
American
Nobody moves. Everything is okay. If you try to make any move, you'll injure yourself and the airplane. Let's be quiet.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This is beyond rubbish, really. It's absolute crap. Hate to sort of jump from thing to thing, but I did have a very interesting interview I wanted to air. And it goes along with the jumper fraud, and actually it's... we'll take another break after this, but... this is an interview, and although you can't see the video on this audio, it's a very interesting interview with someone who allegedly filmed jumpers on, or filmed several jumpers on 9/11.
So they were, and it was odd because I was filming the buildings, and every time I would put the camera up, it would just be the burning building. And then when I brought the camera down, their people would jump. So, and it's not like I wanted to get them on tape, but I was basically, you know, somehow stopped from doing that from... You know,
you saw it yourself.
I saw it. Yeah, no, I saw it. I saw a lot of people jumping from that front side, or from that east side, I should say. There was a hole in that tower. The one that I really remember is a woman. There had to be a woman because of her jacket. It was like a blue. Like a real royal blue coat, and she just came down kind of straight head first with another guy holding her hand, and that's the one that I can remember. They looked really, when they did come down, though, I don't know, I just watched them. I just watched them come down. And they would, the speed at which they came down was so fast. I've never seen anything drop that fast. It was like, you know, terminal velocity, whatever you call it, but it was like everything else flies a lot slower than the bodies coming down. They were dropping. And you could tell when they came down. But at that point, I never, you know, you just figure from where I was standing, there's a facade, and they were dropping behind the facade. You know, they looked like they were at peace. They didn't look like They weren't flailing, they weren't yelling, they weren't screaming. They were just floating, but fast. But that's the one, the lady in that blue coat, because her coat was so blue. She was holding that guy's hand. She's. There was that. There was another guy that did it. Off of the other tower. But he did it. Like, he did it. Not the very top of it. Just like launched. I couldn't believe it. He's like just like launched himself right off. Just full on, full body. Like nothing even mattered, just went it, just did it. It's unbelievable. And that was it. And then his turn. After I saw that, you know, I just kind of went home.
Yeah, just kind of went home. The you see the absurdity in the clip too. I mean, there's no emotion. He's, although you hear him sobbing and weeping, he never produces a tear. In fact, for about a minute, he rubs his eyes so hard, I think he would burst a vein, but never do any actual tears come out, of course, which is the case, you know, as you can't fake that sort of emotion without some special effects. But anyway, it's time for another break, but to get back, we'll get into some more stuff. So don't go anywhere, you've got James Sloan. This is Dose of Reality Radio.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout. I may make you feel that I can't make you think. Your sperm's in the gutter, your love's in the sink. So you ride sails over the fields, and you make all your animals deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. Sandcastle virtues are all swept away in the tidal destruction, the moral malaise. The elastic retreat rings the close of play as the last wave uncovers the new-fangled way. But your new shoes are worn at the heels, and your suntan is rapidly peeling, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. So far away, I'm a bad dream that I just had today. And you shake your head, you said it's a shame. spin me back down the years and the days of my youth. Draw the lace and black curtains and shut out the whole truth. Spin me down the long ages, let them sing the song. Over the fields, and you make all your animal deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick.
I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. On the run. was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Light on the answering machine, and I had 6 messages. Not the usual thing. And one of the messages was from Stephen.
Mom, it's Stephen. My plane, my building got hit by a plane, and right now it's, I think I'm okay, I'm safe now, but it's smoky. I just want to say how much I love you. And, I will call you when I'm safe. Okay, Mom? Bye.
Yet another fraud for your listening pleasure. Welcome back to this final segment of the show. And, yeah, I mean, it's just remarkable how many obvious frauds we've heard tonight. Yeah, sort of defies credibility that they could do such a terrible job on it. It's also like a last-ditch defense mechanism for people who say, oh, you know, if it really is acting, why didn't they do a better job? But it's like, you know, it's staring you in the face, you know, it can only be one thing. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And, but some people are just so blinded that they can't see it. Finally, I was going to play what I alluded to earlier, which was in the previous segment, the backmasking in the Stairway to Heaven song. First of all, I'm going to play a song called Empty Spaces by Pink Floyd. This is from the 1979 album The Wall, and this is an admitted case of, well, it's not hidden, it's a deliberate case of a backmasked lyric included in the song. And this is what, you know, a deliberate attempt sounds like. Whoops, that was the wrong one. Here we go. That's a deliberate omitted backmask lyric. As you can see, it never comes out perfectly clearly, but you know, it's coherent enough to understand. This is the Stairway to Heaven case, which has been steadfastly denied by all the band members and everybody associated with the group, but this is the alleged Led Zeppelin backmasking. First we'll listen again to it forward and then backward. If there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alone there. It's just a spring clean for the May Queen. Yes, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road. You're on the edge of my sweet Satan. Yeah, certainly something to think about. I mean, as I've alluded to in the past on the show, and indeed today, I think many of those alleged backmasks are, like the Queen one, for example. Another one, Bites the Dust, allegedly says it's fun to smoke marijuana. Backwards, I don't buy into that particular one. I think that's just suggestion. But this particular one, it's just the word Satan coming three or four times there in rapid succession, very audibly. It's when you look at Led Zeppelin, generally in those classic rock bands, the amount of symbolism. You know, Alan Parsons is another one who's saying a lot about Saturn worship, and of course, you know, the Sirius, the Eye in the Sky songs. More than evidence enough of that. You know, Pink Floyd, obviously the biggest selling album, Dark Side of the Moon, was the big triangle on the front, and you know, it's been around forever, really. But Led Zeppelin, particularly the Satanism, I think, generally in what they do, even if Stairway isn't an example of that, is, you know, pretty obvious for everyone to see. So, like I said, it's not going to stop me from enjoying the music, but it is there, and you have to acknowledge it. It's been there forever. You know, you have to sell your soul to get anywhere in music. It's always been the case, you know. Not under any illusions to that. It's just never been as obvious as it is now with Jay-Z, and you know, but it's ruined the experience somewhat, but you know, if you give up on music, I mean, life's not really worth living too much, but you have to acknowledge that it's there. So that's about all for tonight. I'm going to close out with 9 minutes and 25 seconds of musical art. Easily Bruce Springsteen's best song, I think. It gets little airplay, maybe because of its length, but you know, other songs like Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody and Stairway to Heaven, which I just played an excerpt from, got heavy rotation despite their length. So many people feel that Born in the USA was a sellout commercially for Springsteen, his first sort of money that he started to make money, album he started to make money from, though. Obviously, this particular song's from Born to Run, but It's something to be, you know, it's hard to believe his albums were 10 years apart. It's, there's a lot of debate about which album's better, but this particular song is just the Michelangelo's David of rock songs, in my opinion. So, one of my favourite songs. Has been for many years, but that's all for tonight, and we'll see you next time. Hopefully back with Brian and Justin and myself before too long. Good night. We'll be right back.
beneath the city, two hearts beat. Soul engines running through a night so tender. In a bedroom locked, in whispers of soft refusal, and then surrender. In the tunnels uptown, the rats on dream guns him down. The shots echo down them hallways in the night. No one watches and the ambulance pulls away. Where's the girl shuts out the bedroom light? Outside the streets on fire and a real death waltz between what's flesh and what's fantasy. Man, the poets down here don't write nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be. And in the quick of the night, they reach for their moment and try to make an honest stand. But they wind up wounded, not even dead. Tonight in jungle land.